In the Northern Hemisphere, you might remember this summer was incredibly hot. Up to 600 people may have died related to heat in Phoenix, Arizona alone. But we're already looking ahead to next year because last summer might have been one of the coolest we will have experienced for decades. We know the effects of climate change are exacerbating the extreme heat, so we're talking more about heatproofing our cities today as part of NPR's Climate Solution series. Jake Biddle is a staff reporter with our editorial partners at Grist. Hi, Jake.
Hi, how's it going?
Good, thanks, Jake. So maybe for some, the record temperatures in the Southwest and beyond are already in the rearview mirror. But remind us why heatproofing our cities is so essential and why cities get so hot in the first place.
Right, yeah. So this past summer, we saw some really, really shocking temperatures in some of the largest cities in the United States. Chicago had close to triple-digit temperatures for a couple of weeks. Phoenix spent more than a month getting above 110 degrees every day. And yes, the world itself is getting hotter as a result of climate change and El Nino, but also cities tend to trap heat during the day and also the night just because of what they're made out of, right? So all that concrete and asphalt and metal, that sort of traps the sun's heat during the day. Then you have all this waste heat and exhaust from cars and building heating systems and air conditioning units. And then as the sun goes down, the cities release all that heat, right? So all that heat starts to kind of get secreted out of the concrete and the asphalt, and that makes sure that the body doesn't really get a break during the night. So it's very dangerous during the day because the temperatures get very high, and then you don't really get a reprieve at night.
But Jake, I have to say, you know, it's not like we don't know solutions here. We do. What are the main ways to reduce heat in big cities or in urban settings?
Yeah. So at Grist, we spent kind of a couple months trying to ask people about what the solutions would be. And we found that there was almost this sense of like frustration on the part of the experts that we talked to because all the solutions are pretty simple. So people told us, you know, you can put trees on sidewalks, right? You can increase airflow by letting air kind of go through buildings. You can put, you know, water systems, right? Fountains or misting devices. Mm. And you can just erect shade structures, right? So just keep people out of the sun.
So simple.
Basically, you have to find a combination of these solutions, you know, throughout the massive, you know, fabric of a big city.
So let's get specific. Let's take Paris's underwater cooling tunnels. How do these work?
So basically, instead of using air conditioning units, right, which, as I said, not only are they expensive and they're bad for the climate themselves, but they also leak waste heat as they operate. What Paris did is basically they drew water from the River Seine and they pumped it to like a central cooling station where it was cooled down. Then they ran this cooled water through pipes in about 500 major buildings, right, to the Louvre and other big buildings. And basically that relieved those buildings of the need to use traditional air conditioning units. So you cool the water down to one place, then you funnel it through the buildings, and that keeps those buildings cool. Not only that, it also reduces carbon emissions and it reduces the leakage of those refrigerant chemicals that come out of a window air conditioning unit.
And that sounds like kind of a major infrastructure project. There are also other ways. Let's talk about the green walls. When we see these in Singapore, in Tel Aviv, tell us about them.
Right. So one big challenge that downtown areas and cities face, right, is not only do you have to try to prevent it from getting too hot on the street, you also have to reduce the need for, you know, cooling energy demand inside. So basically what some buildings in Singapore have done is they cover the walls of a building with more or less like ivy or shrubbery. And this sort of does two things, right? Like plants themselves cool down the surrounding air and they prevent the buildings from trapping all this heat. So they keep things cool on the street surrounding the building, but it also reduces the need to run air conditioners inside the building because the sun doesn't go in and heat the building up on the inside.
And they look pretty.
Yes, they look very nice as well, which can't be understated.
So Jake, I have to ask, what's blocking widespread implementation in the US? I mean, some things are as simple as just really big shade structures, say at bus stops or playgrounds. Why aren't we doing any of these things?
Yeah, it's a really good question. I think, you know, you could say that funding is one constraint, right? But I think even more than that, it's just never been, heat has never been something that there has existed a governance structure for in the United States, right? Until very recently, there was no city that had a chief heat officer, and health departments and building departments weren't really incorporating the risk of heat into their designs, right? So really, in addition to finding the money, which is obviously always a constraint, it's a matter of logistical awareness at every level of the urban fabric, right? So all the hospital owners, stadium designers, parks department, they all have to incorporate this at every level of design, which is challenging.
So Jake, could these kinds of adaptation strategies actually save lives? Is it enough to make a difference?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, for the hottest days in the hottest cities, having access to shade or water or a tree-lined sidewalk can make all the difference between somebody staying alive and then entering a heat stroke episode and dying.
Jake Biddle is a reporter with our editorial partners at Grist. Thank you, Jake.
Thanks.